This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 13th of September 2019. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 13th of September, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: Brine may stand as an independent. Decision day on £150 million scheme. And new officers to take fight to the criminals. So, Norma, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Yes, Brine may stand as an independent. Winchester MP Steve Brine would consider standing as an independent at the general election, the Chronicle has learned. The MP, who had the whip withdrawn for voting against the government over the no-deal Brexit last week, was said to be considering his options. That includes standing against the official Conservative candidate if, as it is widely expected, a general election is held soon. Mr. Brine tweeted on Saturday, "A special afternoon at the Littleton and Hairstock show, handing out the prizes and catching up with the excellent local councillors Caroline, Stephen and Patrick. Thank you for the overwhelming positive response to events this week. All, and I mean all, options remain on the table." Mr. Brine, the MP since defeating Martin Todd in 2010, has received some 2,000 emails, with the majority said to be supportive, and many urging him to stand as an independent. A local friend, who asked not to be named, said, "Steve has shown that the idea that any of the 21 rebel MPs were self-serving is just not true. But he has had quite a big shock, losing the whip. It has been a very, very difficult for him. The party is like a family and he has worked for it for more than 20 years. Quite a lot of people are telling him to stand as an independent from all parties, but he is asking himself, do you want to do this anymore? He is taking soundings now that the Parliament has been prorogued. He is considering all options." The friend added, "He wants to keep the Conservative Party in the centre ground. He didn't win the seat at three elections by being right-wing, but being a one-nation Conservative. That is where Winchester is." In a statement, Mr. Brine, MP, said, "The response from the constituents when I resigned as a minister in the spring was huge, but the response in the past week, including last weekend, as I continued my work as a constituency MP, has been completely overwhelming." Mr. Brine added, "Whether people voted Leave or Remain, whether they are supporters of mine or not, they have been really keen to recognise in these cynical times an MP who put himself on the line. I've received thousands of messages and had countless conversations face to face, pretty much all supportive of the move to speak out against a no-deal Brexit and urging me to stay as a Winchester MP. I need to take further soundings, which the unnecessarily long prorogation now allows, and talk to my family. So I would do that, and in this stage, all options absolutely remain on the table." Mr. Brine was chosen as the official candidate in March, but Jonathan Leggett, chairman of the Winchester Conservative Association, in an email to party members last week, seen by the Chronicle, said, "It is with regret that I acknowledge Steve Brine MP has lost the Conservative Party whip. He is therefore no longer a Conservative MP and is ineligible to stand as a Conservative member parliamentary candidate. I would like to thank Steve for all his hard work representing Winchester over the last 9 years. He's been hard-working and dedicated MP, and I wish him the very best for the future.
Decision day on a £150 million scheme. And this article is accompanied by an artist's impression of the station approach concept. Councillors will today decide on whether a £150 million regeneration project should proceed in Winchester. Members of Winchester City Council's Planning Committee will discuss the application for the station approach scheme. If the application is approved, it will mark one of the final hurdles being crossed in getting the project off the ground and go a long way to potentially unlocking £5 million in grant money towards improving public space near the railway station. As previously reported, the scheme is set to transform the area, creating 140,000 square feet of Grade A office space, along with a further 17,000 square feet of retail, cafe and restaurant space. Civic chiefs estimate it will provide an £81 million boost to the local economy and create 1,000 jobs. However, the application has faced a bumpy ride in recent weeks, with concerns ranging from the council not having any control once the land has been leased to a developer, and fear the council is at risk of having to repay £5 million in funding, to objections over the scale of the buildings and the number of parking spaces. One of those to voice concerns was Councillor Kim Gottlieb, who said in a letter to Cabinet members that continuing with the current proposal would be unwise. Councillor Gottlieb is on the list of deputies who could vote on the Planning Committee if one of the more regular members is unavailable. But under council rules, councillors with a prejudicial interest in an application or who have made a predetermination are restricted in how much they can participate. The application has received more than 40 formal objections, most of which focus on the scale and appearance of the development, as well as the parking. It did receive one formal letter of support from Mark Mills Goodlett, Group Managing Director of the Winchester Motor Group, and has regularly been backed by councillors and business leaders, including those from the Hampshire Chamber of Commerce and Winchester Business Improvement District. Should the planning application be approved, an open forum will be held on Monday, September the 16th, to discuss the next steps of the project. The full council will then meet on September the 25th to approve or decline entering into the £5 million LEP grant agreement and the spending of that money. The process to find a developer who will bring the plans to life will then begin in earnest.
New officers to take fight to the criminals. Hampshire's top police boss has promised to take the fight to the county's criminals after the government announced plans to employ 20,000 new police officers across the UK. Olivia Pinkney, Chief Constable of Hampshire Police, says she wants to use the force's allocation of the extra staff to tackle criminals further upstream. It comes after Chancellor Sajid Javid announced funding to support the recruitment of 20,000 new officers nationwide, with a first wave of up to 6,000 officers who will be shared among the 43 forces in England and Wales. Ms Pinkney said she did not yet know how many officers Hampshire Police was to be able to recruit. But she said the new officers will be deployed in frontline policing and used to combat crime at an earlier stage. She said, "I really want to use the new officers to increase productivity. We're really good at investigating crimes once it happens, but we want to do more about stopping crime. I want to use this boost to get further upstream and more productive in stopping those who want to prey on our communities." Ms Pinkney said the extra staff would also help relieve pressure on the force's current staff, which she said had lost around 2,800 officers and 500 police staff in the last 10 years. She added, "We've got the fewest number of officers per 100,000 people in the country, and we still deliver a fantastic service. We really punch above our weight. These extra staff will help us." Ms. Pinckney said the force was hoping to recruit people who relished working in a team and had a real sense of service. She said the force was particularly interested in bilingual candidates and was keen to encourage more black and minority ethnic candidates to apply. This week, in a budget update, Mr. Javid announced that the Treasury would fund the recruitment of 20,000 new officers across the UK, and this includes £750 million for 2020-21 and an immediate £45 million to kickstart recruitment. Well, that concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, followed by Christian comment, letters to the editor, historical items, chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements this week. Alan Stanley Frank Allen, known as Bill, who died on the 31st of August, aged 91. Ashley Edward Wortley Ashley, Ted, died peacefully at Countess Mountbatten Hospice, aged 83. Cook, Pauline Cook, who died peacefully with her family on the 4th of September, aged 87. Edwards, Barbara Noel Edwards, known as Punch, died peacefully on the 22nd of August, aged 97. Cannell, Stephen Cannell, formerly of Winchester, passed away in a hospice in Tucson, Arizona, on the 8th of July. Lockley, Peter Jackson Lockley, died peacefully in hospital, aged 88. Mortimer, Joyce Audrey Mortimer, died on the 2nd of September, aged 92. Richards, John Richards of Waltham Chase, died on the 31st of August, aged 85. And Sergeant, Dorothy Emily Maud Sergeant, died in hospital on the 29th of August. That concludes the death announcements. Now we move on to Christian comment read by Andrew, please.
And this week's Christian comment is titled The Cost of Discipleship and is contributed by the Reverend Philip Crinks, who is priest in charge of St. Faith's Parish in Winchester. In 1931, a brilliant young theologian was ordained as a minister in the German Protestant Church. Immediately, he became a leader of the fight against Nazism. He transferred to the new Confessing Church and became the leader of an underground college training new ministers. In 1937, the college was closed by the Gestapo and for 2 years became a college on the run. By 1941, the minister became an agent for the German resistance agent and was arrested in 1943. Transferred to Flossenbürg concentration camp, he ministered to fellow prisoners and guards. In April 1945, he was included in an execution order issued by Hitler. Led away after taking the Sunday service in Flossenbürg on the 8th of April 1945, he was condemned to death at a summary court-martial. He was hanged at dawn the next day. The martyrdom of Dietrich Bonhoeffer shocked the world and reshaped the church. Bonhoeffer's writings began to be read around the world in the light of his own life and death. In The Cost of Discipleship, written whilst working underground, Bonhoeffer distinguishes cheap grace from costly grace. Cheap grace means the sacraments, the forgiveness of sin, and the consolations of religion thrown away at cut prices. The Church's inexhaustible treasury, from which she showers blessings with generous hands, without asking questions or fixing limits. Costly grace means the pearl of great price, to buy which the merchant will sell all his goods. The call of Jesus Christ, at which the disciple leaves his nets and follows him. The gift which must be asked for. It is costly because it costs a man his life and it is grace because it gives a man the only true life. The cost of discipleship is something the church often hesitates to shout about from the rooftops, and yet each of us knows it. The cost of doing what is right is written in every chapter of every history of every nation, institution, family, and human heart. Christian teaching contains both challenge and comfort. We will not always walk by still waters, and whether the waters are still or rage and swell, God walks with us every step we take. Jesus' words are full of challenge, including those read in many churches last Sunday. Whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and even life itself, cannot be my disciple. Jesus talks of the cost of keeping the faith and the possibility of being brought into conflict with community, with family, and even with our love of natural life itself. We rightly pray that we will not have to pay the cost which Bonhoeffer did. But none of our lives can be free of suffering and loss. Our comfort and hope is that, when we suffer, we are united with our suffering Lord Jesus. As we walk the way of the cross, we walk with him. As we share his sacrifice, so we also share in the victory he wins over sin and death.
Thank you. Now we're going to move on to letters to the editor. And Norma, you're going to start us off.
Smooth departure. Sir, in 2017, our two local MPs were elected on the Conservative manifesto pledge to deliver a smooth and orderly departure from the European Union and forge deep and special partnership with our friends and allies across Europe. The Chronicle, September the 5th, reports that Mr. Brine has done the honourable thing when faced with a leader intent on Brexit at any cost, thereby almost certainly destroying his career and livelihood. Mr. Hollingbury, on the other hand, has abandoned his manifesto pledge and has adopted his leader's new policy in the referendum he voted to remain. Yet he supports the Prime Minister's no-deal rhetoric, although he acknowledges that even leaving with a deal will call for as much as can be done to mitigate the economic effects of doing so. Both MPs agree that Parliament should honour the result of the referendum. However, the referendum was about to let's take back control, the easiest trade deal in the world, and the extra £350 million per week for the NHS. If Parliament had honoured that, we Remainers would not have a leg to stand on. In the 2019 EU elections, over 5 million Brexiteers voted for a Brexit party that had no policies and shunned the Brexit party which had. Brexit hardman Steve Baker turned down a job in Boris Johnson's cabinet because he wanted to be free to vote against the deal, i.e. he did not want to be involved in shaping policies, he just wanted to say no. These two events confirm that Brexit is not a political movement. It is just a collection of grievances, real or imagined. There is no conceivable outcome that will appease the Brexiteers. If we leave with no deal, they'll say the chaos is the result of the EU's refusal to give them a deal that they wanted. And if we leave with a deal, they'll say it's not a clean break. And if we don't leave at all, they will just continue to agitate. There will be no happy ever after. And that was from Roger Stevens, Cliffway, Compton.
And for those of you that can bear it, continuing the Brexit theme, health worries, and this is contributed by Rosemary Conway. Sir, as one of many people with concerns about possible medicine shortages, I am relieved to see so many politicians, including Steve Brine, uniting at long last against a no-deal Brexit. Along with many others, I have wet macular degeneration in both eyes, a condition where rogue blood vessels distort the vision, requiring time-sensitive bi-monthly injections in the eyeball. Any delay can result in irrevocable further damage and loss of reading vision. Clearly, this is just one of many conditions where lives and happiness of people could be ruined by medicine and equipment shortages from custom delays caused by a no-deal Brexit. I wrote to our MP, Steve Brine, when he was a junior health minister and received a formal statement couched in government's official wording. Unfortunately, given this government's frequent broken assurances and promises in the last 3 years, their banana republic messes over a ferry contract, failure to adequately prepare for a no-deal Brexit long ago, and shamefully last-minute preparations now, it is impossible to place confidence in their statements when our health is at risk. At the hospital where I received my eye injections, I asked the doctor there if they were worried about the possibility of shortages of drugs and even basic equipment needed for vital operations. "Yes, yes, we are all worried, very worried," was his reply. I voted leave, but not on any terms. And most important of all, we are faced with an existential, global, environmental crisis of unspeakable proportions and consequences, with radical action needed in the crucial next 10 years. We should be concentrating on that now urgently as the first priority, partnered with the EU, not with a Trumpite USA. David Cameron gambled on the referendum without first thinking the issues such as Northern Ireland through responsibly and without an exit strategy. Boris Johnson is now gambling with our eyesight, lives and jobs. Mr. Steve Brine is much to be commended for his principled stand, and I hope he seeks re-election as an independent if necessary. And that's from Rosemary Conway of Wesley Close Week, Winchester.
And this letter from Tony Stevens at the Pastures, Kingsworthy, is headed "Need to Report." So, in the Chronicle's recent articles on potholes on August the 29th, mention was made of the number of potholes reported within Hampshire, as well as the number of claims made against the County Council for damage caused by their failure to repair such road defects. Excuse me. What was interesting was that nearly three quarters of the claims made were rejected, probably due to the statutory defence that Section 58 of the Highways Act 1980 allows them to hide behind when a pothole has not been previously reported, excuse me, or only just reported, or their systems of inspection say that they have been diligent in their inspection process. This, however, is not always the case. All reported potholes stroke road defects are manually inspected to assess their priority, and then an order is placed with the contractor. Unfortunately, in many instances, no work is actioned due to this inspection and probability of a lack of available funding, even though the complaint is still valid, i.e. the pothole or road defect is present but will not be repaired. If, however, a motorist or other road user is subsequently caused damage or injury due to the failure of the council to complete the repair work, then the motorist or road user could make a legitimate claim on the council for the cost of repairs. I would therefore urge all motorists and the general public to report potholes and other related defects and damage online to Hampshire County Council so that HCC can have no excuse when it comes to claims from road users when their mode of transport or themselves have been damaged or injured. On the other hand, of course, HCC and or the government could suspend Section 58 until the situation regarding repairs to the highway are back to more manageable numbers. Never going to happen, but just a thought. And that's from Tony Stevens, The Pastures, Kingsworthy.
Laughing stock. Sir, at 79 years of age, I thought I had seen and heard it all. Think of all our servicemen and women who gave their lives for this country in two world wars. Our fight now is not with planes, ships, tanks, bombs, etc., but with the bully boys from the EU. They are trying to teach Britain a lesson so that no other member state will leave the EU and will do anything to avoid a Brexit. At the same time, save many million billions of pounds. In 2016, the majority of people in Britain voted to leave the EU, and the meaning of the word democracy is supporting the majority vote of the nation. Do we really want Corbyn as our next Prime Minister? Think hard before you vote in the next general election. Either back with the EU or trading with the Commonwealth. Surely it must be with the Commonwealth. We must not become the laughing stock of the world if we are not already. And that was from Dave Elloway, Orglanda Road, Abbots Barton, Winchester.
And continuing our theme about the roads, this letter is titled Workmanship. Sir, Tony Stevens wrote about Springvale Road and the speed limit, and I agree with the general tenor of his letter, which was in the Chronicle September the 5th. The officers at the time must have carried out detailed research, and I assume they came to a conclusion based upon their statistical findings. I wonder if recent research has been carried out as to the effect of the speed limit and what the opinion is now, based on today's evidence. Is that information in the public domain? Is there now a case for reverting to the original speed limit, or was the original case proven? The surface of Springvale Road is quite appalling and affects driving conditions. This is not about so-called potholes, but sheer bad workmanship in the reinstatement of excavations. Workmen seem unable to use a straight edge, and those responsible for signing off work and paying for it should be held to account. By the way, and by the way of contrast, there is a really fine patch at Foxwood Close. Find it if you can. And that's from Arnold Jarman, The Pastures, Kingsworthy.
And on a different theme, on cycle paths rather than roads, this is headed Irresponsible. Sir, it would be irresponsible to spend council taxpayers' money on upgrading a path to a bridleway or cycle path to suit a tiny pressure group in circumstances of little use and net disadvantage to the community, referring back to Ned McLeod's letter of August the 29th. One such path between South Wanston School and Worthy Down led to the loss of a school bus and the transfer of almost all the children to car transport. I believe I can safely say that South Wanston is not happy about the outcome. The proposed sewage works path upgrade is presented as towards Henry Beaufort School. Probably that bus too will be withdrawn, bringing more inconvenience and traffic to South Wanston and Hairstock. I would not send an 11 to 15 year old along 2 miles of isolated track, and nor will most parents. There is a very good case for upgrading the kilometre of St Swithin's Way between Kingsworthy and Abbots Barton. It will be less than half the cost of the South Wanston White Elephant of a path, whilst benefiting far more people. Come on, HCC and Councillor Jackie Porter, why so silent on this matter? And that letter was from James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
Future vision. Geoffrey Burnaby writes, Sir, at the end of his parody of a town guidebook, Dane Fleet Revealed, published in 1949, Osbert Lancaster drew a prophetic cartoon of a town of tomorrow. An isolated medieval gatehouse and a redundant Victorian church surrounded by tower blocks and motorways was a stark warning of the possible shape of things to come. Not perhaps so very different from the illustration of the station approach proposal on page 3 of last week's issue of your newspaper, which showed the former registry office dwarfed by an overpowering featureless office blocks behind it. Is this really the first impression we want future visitors to Winchester to be greeted with as they leave the railway station? And that, as I say, was from Geoffrey Burnaby, St James Terrace, Winchester.
And this letter is from Mark Rowe, who claims to be a proud Wintonian and an English Democrat, and it's titled No Link with the EDL. Sir, I looked in the Hampshire Chronicle, September the 5th, and read a fellow reader's letter who is uneducated about our party, the English Democrats. We have nothing to do with the EDL. They are totally separate people. So I asked this reader and fellow readers to look at our English Democrats website and educate themselves about our party before making any comments that we could use against any person in a defamation case against such people who wrongly call our members EDL. In the English Democrats, we do not tolerate racism or prejudice. I urge anyone to look at our website and not Wikipedia, which gets things wrong. I would also like to point out, as stated in the letter headlined Unique City, that I was writing as a private citizen, not on behalf of the English Democrats. I am proud to be a Wintonian and love Winchester with its mixed cultures and history. I have friends who are Muslim, Christian, and other faiths, plus of other cultures. I have lived in the Winchester area all my life and always learn each day more and more about the fantastic city and the world we live in. Finally, sir, I urge anyone who wishes to know about our party to come along in October to meet the English Democrats, even Mr. Taylor, who can then see that he has his facts wrong. Anyone is free to talk to me while I'm delivering the English Democrats leaflets, along with our other members. Plus, I am happy to do a write-up for the Hampshire Chronicle to publish alongside the other political parties in Winchester. As the Hampshire Chronicle, the true voice of Hampshire, can show all Democratic parties fairly. And that's from Mark Rowe, a proud Wintonian and English Democrat in weak Winchester.
And the last letter is headed Worrying Rise, and it's from Dr. Andrew Molodinsky, from Mental Health Lead in BMA Consultants Committee. So for those of us working in frontline mental health services, it is extremely worrying to see a rise in suicide rates in the UK for the first time in 5 years, as reported in the Chronicle on September the 5th. According to figures published recently by the Office for National Statistics, there were a total of 6,507 suicides registered by coroners in the UK last year. That's equivalent to 11.2 per 100,000 people, which is up 11.8% on the previous year. In 2018, the South West had a suicide rate of 17.7 per 100,000 people population for males and 5.7 per 100,000 for females. Every suicide is a tragedy and devastating for families and friends. However, suicide is often preventable, and more must be done to make sure this increase is not the beginning of a more sinister trend. Demand for mental health care has been rapidly rising for a number of years, but frontline services have not seen the investment so vitally needed in order to keep pace. It's shameful that in the 21st century, patients are being failed by reduced services and longer waits for treatments, while frontline mental health staff continue to be placed under more and more pressure. This situation is not tenable for much longer. While there has been some recent focus on suicide prevention strategies, there must be a greater focus on improving public mental health in the UK, with more investment for local services. A life course approach is required, ensuring support for mental health during childhood, education, employment, and into later life. It must now finally be time for kind words from health leaders to become actions, parity of resources and care, not of esteem. And that letter's from Dr. Andrew Molodinsky, BMA Consultants Committee Medical Mental Health Lead, Tavistock Square, London. That concludes the letters. Now we're going to step back in time, a couple of hundred years to start with. Norma.
So, 200 years ago, on Monday, September the 13th, 1819, a newly safety coach called the Independent is now running from Southampton to London, the construction of which renders it almost impossible to overturn, while the comfort and accommodation of the passengers appear to have been greatly improved. We understand it has given great satisfaction to the neighbourhood of Southampton. And the second item is, a white pheasant was found during the late harvest in a cornfield. It was knocked down by some workmen, but fortunately not much hurt, and is now thriving in the possession of the Reverend John Dampier of Collinshay. And then 100 years ago, on Saturday, September the 13th, 1919. Ought we to buy German goods? This question is disturbing the peace of mind of every frugal housekeeper. It is attacked in very different ways through the columns of the daily press. Some ask in hysterical agitation, could you drink from a cup fashioned by hands red with the blood of our lovers' sons and husbands? Others, less well off, say that to buy cheap German things is the only way to bring our profiteering tradesmen back into their bearings. And the second item is, a very interesting display was given by Otterbourne Boy Scouts on the occasion of the cricket match between Hursley and Otterbourne in the grounds of Otterbourne House. Much credit is due to the scoutmaster, Mr. S. Bright, who has trained the boys splendidly. Dispatch running, boxing, racing were all included in the programme and all was smartly performed.
And 50 years ago, Saturday, September the 13th, 1969. Despite stiff competition from other shows, all roads converged on Arsford on Saturday, when the pride of Hampshire's farms gathered for the annual Arsford Agricultural Show, held once again at picturesque, tree-fringed Titchbourne Park. Brilliant sunshine and an almost cloudless sky attracted thousands of spectators, drawn to the showground by the ambitious Something for Everyone programme. Large landowners rubbed shoulders with tenant farmers, and the managers of farms combined as they competed for the £650 prize money and the 26 perpetual challenge cups and trophies. With the emphasis on all-round entertainment, the organisers made sure there was something for everyone, including the small child area. And the second point is, Winchester 69 is underway. The 10-day festival, designed by the Chamber of Commerce to boost trade and commerce in the city and staged with the cooperation of the International Wool Secretariat, was officially opened by the Mayor, Councillor Stanley Spicer. The festival heralds a new approach to a trade drive. Winchester 69 is geared to the 20th century, carrying on from the businessmen of old, who took part in the ancient St. Giles Fair, which used to be held on St. Giles Hill as far back as the Norman Conquest. Gone are the daily bedecked tents and stalls of olden days. This trade exhibition has been brought right into the city, with shops and other places of commerce putting on special displays for the benefit of their customers. A large trade exhibition is being held at the Guildhall, the seat of the City Council, and the main social venue in the town.
And 25 years ago, on Friday, September the 9th, 1994, two items. Amid bitter accusations of a U-turn, the ruling Liberal Democrats on Winchester City Council have opted for compulsory competitive tendering in the debate of privatisation of housing services. The decision on Wednesday's Housing Committee marks the culmination of 2 years of mounting controversy on the City Council over the issue, which sparked the resignation of Labour veteran John Cloyne in May. Furious Tories rounded on the Liberal Democrats for changing their mind over the summer break, from supporting the voluntary competitive tendering, VCT, option, to opting for CCT, compulsory competitive tendering. Advocates of CCT argue that the city can launch an in-house bid and retain control of services for their council tenants, whilst proponents of VCT say the council is just as likely to lose in a tendering process and that the voluntary option allows the city to set stricter guidelines on the winning bid. Under VCT, the council would not have been able to put in a bid to run the service itself. But Liberal Democrat council leader Alan Mitchell said it had become increasingly clear that the VCT course would give the council little scope to vet the privatisation bids. He said, "This issue is probably the most important single issue this housing committee has taken for many years. It is not a matter to be decided dogmatically." And the second item, a bizarre threat to Winchester's new £920,000 park and ride scheme has been lifted after an 11th hour compromise in an ownership dispute over land used as a barbecue area by Bar End residents. The ambitious but experimental traffic management scheme, which is due to open at two Bar End sites on September the 19th, could have fallen foul of a row over a 1 metre wide strip of land between surveyors at Hampshire County Council and two Winchester families living at St Catherine's View. Accusations of petty bureaucracy and land stealing have rained back and forth between the St Catherine's View properties and the castle over the past week. Only the last-minute construction of a temporary fence around the disputed strip of land, which will allow the two families continued access for the time being, has prevented the dispute escalating to threaten the opening of Park and Ride. And now we come back to the present with the editorial comment, please, Nora.
Where will the extra police be based? Setting aside the motives for the sudden investment in policing, there is no doubt that having 20,000 extra police officers across the UK is a good thing. It will return the numbers to something like the situation 10 years ago, before the crash of 2008 and 2009, although the exact numbers that will be heading for Hampshire are unclear. The police will be far better able to cope with a massive increase in internet fraud, for example. Hampshire Chief Constable Olivia Pinkney said, "I really want to use the new officers to increase productivity. We are really good at investigating crimes once it's happened, but we want to do more about stopping crime." No one could possibly disagree with that. There is just one question pertinent to Winchester. Where are these extra officers going to be based? The large police station at North Wars was sold and has since been purchased by Southampton University and razed. The downsized force is based in Mottisfont Court in the High Street opposite the Westgate. Perhaps they should buy back the North Wars site.
Now we have first person, please, Andrew.
And this is a challenge to play Join the Blots, which is issued by Joanna Lewis. Fancy playing a new game? It's called Join the Blots. Get a map of Winchester and find a grey or black pen. Then mark up all the recent hideous, oversized constructions. Join them up and see what shape you can make. Submit the design to the planning department and they might build it. Confused? Let me help. Start at the bottom of town. The towering Chesil Care Home, much needed, but about two stories too high and too close to the road, despoiling the low-lying medieval buildings opposite. Move along to the High Street and the new Travel Lodge. Budget hotels, they're great. But the cheap monolith facade drags the high street down. Next, go out of town along City Road. There's a giant metal construction on the left protruding out of the hillside. Mark that up. Don't forget the new flats at the back of the train station. Who thinks it's okay to put people to live on top of a station car park? Convenient if you commute, certainly. You get the departure announcements while you shower. Breakfasting will always be to the sound of snap, crackle and pop. But that will be the sound of your lungs digesting the morning levels of carbon monoxide. Then there's a massive tower of red on the right as you motor up Stockbridge Road at the corner of Hadley Road. Nice brickwork, but how did that get through planning? Winchester is being hit with an epidemic of inappropriate, ugly buildings, too large for the space available, epitomised by the latest plans for station approach. These are jaw-droppingly oversized, a homage to the architecture of the Third Reich. The CGI images are misleading. They never show how this will look next to the buildings already there, so the reality is probably worse. The level-headed experts at the City of Winchester Trust have implored the planning committee to ditch the current plans, concerned that the bulk and massing is far too great for the site. That's a reference to the six stories of low-grade design buildings planned to maximise revenue and minimise costs. But there are period houses close by and a grove of silver birches full of wildlife. But heaven forbid spoiling the fun for developers by insisting such factors matter. Residents are up in arms, and rightly so. Six stories of dark windows combined with sprawling parking bays would take away light, plus destroy the local character and conservation area. And what for? Its focus, well, intentionally, is on job creation. But offices will be hard to fill. Shops will certainly struggle. So why cling to an oversized build? It's silly. The public want planners to demand smaller, sustainable, and smarter. Downsizing is also now about saving the planet. It's not just the town centre shouldering an outbreak of oversized, out-of-character builds. Most housing developers still insist on 4-5 bedrooms, often each with en-suites, to hit the million-pound mark. Take semi-rural areas like Dean Lane. Even respected local architects are joining in the pack 'em in while you can stampede. One senior architect is currently involved in shoehorning oversized properties into lovely gardens. About as welcome a sight to residents as a hospital incinerator. And phase one housing at Barton Farm, viewed from the back, it now looks like a scene from the industrial north. Why recreate 1930s Salford when you can look at Lowry online? Station approach is Silver Hill all over again. That scheme was developer-controlled, not fit for the city's character, relying on old economic certainties which no longer apply. It was stopped largely by a rebel with a cause, because stopping it was the right thing to do, and it's the right thing to do again. In the absence of any implementation of the Clare Boyd inquiry recommendations, there's still no sign of a council executive on planning that respects the character of where we live. And that's from Joanna Lewis.
Now, Belgarum, an alternative look at the news. There's a couple of items here. Firstly, a Wintonian reaches 100. Ron Smith has celebrated his 100th birthday. He was born in Cheriton on August 29th, 1919, and has always lived around Winchester. By the outbreak of World War II, he was living in East Stratton, where he lived for at least 55 years. He was one of five boys brought up single-handedly by their mother. At the outbreak of war, he joined the Royal Engineers and is known for his war stories, normally about comradeship, the mischief they got up to, and the lovely people they met in France, Belgium and Germany. In 1947, he met the love of his life, Peggy, who was working in a grocer's in Winchester. They were married on Christmas Eve 1947. They had three children, two girls followed by a boy, and now have seven grandchildren and six great-grandchildren. His other great love was the countryside, and he worked in forestry and later landscaping for Hampshire County Council. His hobbies included walking, photography, landscape painting and wood carving. He led walks for the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Naturalists Trust, Red Cross and children's charities. Their large garden was immaculate and he grew most of their vegetables and fruit until his early 90s. Peggy died 2 years ago and Ron is living at Westholm. He said he's had a good life and that his longevity is due to a daily tot of whiskey, good home cooking and his homegrown vegetables. And the second item, a clash at the fudge stall. A short story about divided Winchester. Louise Parkin, a market trader, posted this following item on social media. Just like to say a big thank you to all the Liberals, Democrats protesting around the Buttercross. You were there for about an hour, completely obscuring my stall. I asked five separate times for you to move away to give me a chance, and my colleagues asked another three times, including when we tried to get a blind man through. I pay rent to Winchester City Council, regardless of whether I'm there, no breaks for illness, holiday or funerals. I appreciate you think you have a mission, but I have a family to feed. And to the tall 70-ish man, not going to call him a gentleman, stood with his back to me about 2 inches from my fudge screens, who when I asked him to move, sixth time, to give me a chance, and who then turned round and looked at me disdainfully and then gave me the finger, I say, really, is that the best you can do? Pathetic. I can only imagine your IQ wouldn't make three figures. And with that, we move on to this week's announcements. We start with what's on. And in Winchester Cathedral on Tuesday, the 17th of September, there's a lunchtime concert, 1 p.m, featuring Simon Tavoni on piano. It's free with a retiring collection. And next week, for two nights at the Theatre Royal, there's a Harold Pinter classic, No Man's Land. It tells the story of a chance meeting between two elderly writers in a North London pub, which leads to an alcohol-fueled evening of reminiscences and verbal power play. This is vintage Pinter from the 1970s, and it's on the 17th and 18th of September only. The Winchester box office for the Theatre Royal is 01962 840 440. And lighting up time ends on Friday the 13th of September at 6:37 a.m. and begins at 7:25 p.m. And next Wednesday the 18th of September it ends at 6:44 a.m. and begins at 7:13 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. And now we continue with further items of general news. Norma.
Bursaries from School for Girls in Foster Care. A private Winchester school for girls is reintroducing a bursary to fund two places for students. St Swithin's School is aiming to provide two full bursaries every year to girls through its Bramston Bursary Foundation. Working with its partner charities and the council, St Swithin's said it will identify girls who are living in care or at home on the brink of going into care, who would thrive emotionally and academically in the stability of the boarding school environment at the St Swithin's. The Bramston Bursary Foundation has an annual fundraising target of £250,000, which fund matched by the school itself, will provide bursaries for two girls joining at 11+, covering the cost of school fees plus 10% for the additional cost of school uniform, trips, social outings and transportation. Headmistress Jane Gandy said, "The foundation was established in the name of Anna Bramston, who founded St Swithin's in 1884 with the vision to provide a talented and hard-working girls, irrespective of background, with the opportunity to reach their full potential through education. We have relaunched the foundation to focus on raising funds only for full, life-changing transformational bursaries, which will allow girls who would not otherwise be able to afford the school fees the opportunity to benefit from St Swithin's education. There are around 95,000 children in the UK who are looked after away from home. 1,100 are in Hampshire. An estimated 18% of the children in care achieve a minimum of 5 GCSEs at grades A star to C, compared with 60% of children not in care." Miss Gandy added, "Through the work of the foundation, St Swithin's aims to provide stability to children who might otherwise move school a number of times during their educational career."
And the growing skills of St Cross residents are displayed at the show. More than 60 people entered produce, flowers and homemade items into this year's St Cross Garden Show. The entries ranged across floral displays, vegetables, jams, marmalades, cakes and crafts, and a very well-supported photography section. Before the prize-giving, tea was served by Jessie Dobson and her team of helpers. The Best in Show was won by Myrtle Cunningham. The St Cross Garden Show, the St Cross Garden Society, is now twinned with Stanmore Gardening Club, who hold talks on the last Monday of every month in the Carroll Youth Centre. And the talks in the show are open to everyone. And this article is accompanied by three photographs by a friend of ours, Charles Jennings. And Charles has got a fantastic shot there of the floral display, which is being, it looks absolutely beautiful. And it's been admired by Trish Spires. And then he's got a couple of shots, one of the apples. Yeah, so there's some very tasty looking apples laid out on a nice white tablecloth. And then a range of homemade jams. So it looks very, very attractive.
And from one set of nice pictures to some horrible pictures of a thatched cottage destroyed by a blaze. A village home has been completely destroyed after fire tore through its thatched roof. Fire crews from across the county rushed to battle the blaze at a home in Beauworth Road, Beauworth, near Alsford, on Saturday night. Its roof was completely destroyed and the building suffered extensive damage during the fire that was reported at 7 p.m. Around 50 firefighters and 12 fire engines were drafted in from Basingstoke, Alsford, Alton, Fareham, Winchester, Eastleigh, Bewley, Redbridge and St Mary's. They managed to salvage some of the household items. No injuries were reported and nearby residents were safe, but neighbours were advised to keep their windows and doors closed. Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service posted to Twitter that they had worked throughout the night to salvage what they could and prevent the fire spreading to other properties. The post said, "A tragic amount of damage has been caused to a beautiful house. Thankfully, no one was hurt." On Saturday, the road was blocked between the A272 and Salt Lane, and drivers advised to avoid the area. The fire service is investigating the cause, and the householders and neighbours did not wish to speak when contacted by the Chronicle. And there's four pictures of the firefighters using a huge hoist to get above the flames and put water down onto the roof. Excuse me. And two other pictures of the roof fully alight. And the aftermath on Sunday with a very sad-looking building with the roof completely collapsed and disappeared. Very sad.
Anglo-Saxon Charters Talk. a leading expert on Anglo-Saxon England, will speak at Winchester College about two royal charters of critical importance to the story of New Minster, later Hyde Abbey. The talk is part of this month's Heritage Open Days. Professor Simon Keynes, the Ellerington and Bosworth Professor of Anglo-Saxon at Cambridge University and a Fellow of Trinity College, will be discussing the spectacular Golden Charter, now in the British Library, which was given by King Edgar in 966 to New Minster, the church of King Alfred's burial. The charter effectively reconstituted reconstituted the Minster as a Benedictine monastery and bestowed on it a royal protection at the time of religious reform. The opening pages include an astonishing picture of King Edgar himself presenting the charter to Christ, and it was this powerful illustration which became the principal image for the Anglo-Saxon kingdom's Art Word War exhibition at the British Library earlier this year. This is a unique chance to hear an outstanding scholar speak about two important charters which link together powerful kings from the Anglo-Saxon era with one of the city's most significant ecclesiastical establishments, said Edward Fennell of Hyde Arts and Heritage. Professor Keynes will be speaking at Winchester College, New Hall, between 3 and 4 p.m. on Saturday, September the 21st. Advance booking is needed via www.winchesterheritageopendays.org.
Walking on fire for Naomi House Charity. Winchester fundraisers will walk over hot coals to help a hospice charity. Naomi House in Jack's Place will be bringing its firewalk event back to the Holiday Inn in Winchester next month following a successful debut earlier this year. On Friday, October the 25th, from 6 p.m, Naomi House in Jack's Place will provide hospice care, which provides hospice care for hundreds of children, young adults and their extended families, is challenging its bravest supporters to walk over 649 degrees centigrade hot coals to raise money for the hospices based in southern Scotney. Charlotte Patrick, the event's fundraiser, said, "We are thrilled to be able to bring this awesome event back to Winchester. The feedback we had from our first group of firewalkers back in February was so brilliant, we couldn't not do it again. Charity firewalking is a great way to fundraise, and it will certainly give you a story or two to tell your friends and family. Entry is £25 for adults and £15 for children aged 8 to 15 years. And to find out more and register, visit the Naomi House website." And this article is accompanied by an absolutely phenomenal picture. So it shows brave fundraisers walking along a strip of these hot coals and the fire blazing away. And it's one of those things that it falls into a category. I know people do it, but I have absolutely no idea how they do it and how they survive. But it is quite spectacular.
Put your questions to the Chief Constable. Hampshire residents are being encouraged to put their questions forward on police priorities and their concerns. Police and Crime Commissioner Michael Lane will be challenging the Chief Constable on police priorities and the questions and concerns of the public. The next COMPAS, that's Commissioners Performance Accountability Scrutiny and Strategy meeting, on September the 24th, will be filmed and available to access via the Commissioner's digital platform. The film will show the question and answer session will offer signposting to further information on the topics covered. It's the Commissioner's statutory role to hold the Chief Constable to account on the performance of the police force on behalf of the public, and the meetings provide an opportunity to do this on a regular basis. The Commissioner is inviting residents to submit their own questions for him to put to the Chief Constable on their behalf. And you can get in touch with the office by Thursday, September the 19th. Michael Lane said, "As I represent you and act as your champion, please let me know your concerns and I will put your questions to the Chief Constable so that she can provide reassurance that police resources are being used as effectively and efficiently as possible, recognising any issues that are on your minds. And anyone wishing to submit a question is asked to do so by contacting 01962 871 595. And there's a picture of a smiling Chief Constable and Michael Lane, the Police Commissioner, in advance of their meeting.
Buses back on road as part of heritage celebrations. Vintage buses will again be running on the streets of Winchester. This time they will be part of the Heritage Open Days this Saturday, September the 14th. The Friends of King Alfred Buses, FOCAB, says a theme for this year will be FOCAB's collection of three Bedford coaches, each of which is rare and historic vehicle, and of which all three have not been seen together since 1967. They will be on display at the Cattle Market car park in Worthy Lane between noon and 3 p.m. and then run some free trips until 5 p.m. This day is expected to be the first public outing of Bedford CA Mini Coach operated by King Alfred in 1967 and at last fully restored over 30 years of dereliction. Very few mini coaches with this type of Martin Water bodywork now survive, and BHO 543C was the only one to operate in Winchester with King Alfred Motor Services. Many will remember the firm of Martin Water for their Dormobile motor caravan conversions, a vehicle type they pioneered in Britain and which in the 1960s and 1970s was so well known that eventually the company was renamed Dormobile. Also planned to be in action are open top 1967 Leyland Alantine and 1931 Dennis, providing a free vintage bus service between the Broadway and the Cattle Market between noon and 5 p.m. Additionally, FOCAB is working with the organisers of the Worthies Festival, a village open day, for which 1959 Leyland Tiger Cub will be providing a free bus service through the day, a vehicle which celebrates its 60th anniversary next month. And there are two pictures. The first one is a beautiful red bus. A lot of us will remember the red buses. Vintage buses outside the Broadway in Winchester. And the other picture is of 8 green buses, two of which are very, very old. So it could be quite exciting if you want to get out and have a ride in an old bus that you remember from the days of yore.
An award for the Creamery. The Tom Parker Creamery in the Meon Valley is among the winners of the 2019 International Cheese and Dairy Awards, winning a gold award for their salted caramel flavoured milk. Held in Nantwich in Cheshire, the International Cheese and Dairy Awards is the world's biggest cheese show and attracting more than 5,000 entries across 300 categories and 27 countries. Judged by 240 discerning judges, the win by Tom Parker Creamery is made all the more impressive by the fact that it's the first year that the company has participated in the awards. Jack Martin, founder of the Tom Parker Creamery, said, "To me, and many within the industry, these awards are seen as the Oscars of dairy, and we're absolutely delighted that our delicious salted caramel-flavoured milk has been recognised for its high quality and great taste. delivering the pleasure of natural, high-quality dairy to people without compromise, Tom Parker Creamery produces a range of naturally flavoured milks, the way they should be, using milk from their grass-fed cows from their family farm at Beacon Hill Farm near Exton. The range of flavoured milks are available via Milk and More for £2 for a 500ml bottle. Choose from salted caramel, wickedly delicious chocolate, and a wonderfully creamy iced coffee variety. The creamery began in 1921 with just 14 cows, and Tom Parker, otherwise known as the Governor, delivering milk by horse and cart. As word spread of the milk he was selling, his fleet of beautifully painted horse-drawn milk floats became a regular sight in the local area. Four generations on, and now run by the Governor's great-grandson, Jack Martin, the promise still rings true. Never compromise on taste or quality. Their cows are free-range and grass-fed on their family farm in the beautiful Meon Valley, Hampshire. Since the beginning, Tom Parker Creamery have always believed that happy cows make the best milk, which is why they ensure their girls are kept in the best condition possible and are outside for 9 months of the year. And that's about 50% longer than free-range regulations state. This approach may mean that there's less milk to sell, but for them it's all about quality, not quantity. And the product is now available to buy nationally. And this is accompanied by a picture of a very smiley Rob Yates, who's the commercial director, holding up a bottle of their milk. And, of course, the gold medal.
Executive chef appointed at hotel. Five-star Lainston House has appointed Phil Yeomans as executive chef. Phil returned to the hotel near Sparsholt, having previously held the position of head chef for 7 years, from 2005 to 2014. He brings with him over two decades of experience in the hospitality industry, and has worked at the Dorchester, Harvey Nichols, Soho House, and in the USA and Bermuda. Phil said, "Winchester is my home, and I'm delighted to return to my roots with the family in a position that will be an exciting new challenge. Lainston House has an excellent reputation, and I'm looking forward to building on this and helping the team to grow." His style of cooking is best described as modern British, combining his classical training with modern techniques, resulting in the creation of flavourful yet clean and delicate dishes. He's passionate about working with local suppliers and producers and aims to bring this to life through his hotel, throughout the hotel as his menus develop. And there's a picture of a smiling Phil Yeomans with a mountain of homegrown vegetables. It looks like he's actually in a walled vegetable garden. Some huge marrows. A pile of beans, lettuce, lots of fresh vegetables in front of him.
Teen becomes youngest solo pilot. A Kingsworthy teenager has become the youngest person in the country to fly a plane solo, having earned his wings just hours into his 16th birthday. Oliver Jarrett, a former pupil of the Henry Beaufort School, had been taking flying lessons with the Airborne Aviation Flying School at Popham Airfield since he was 14. On his birthday, after a check with examiner Max Smith, Oliver took to the air alone and performed his first solo flight, which was a lap around the airfield in the busy circuit that was bustling with other aircrafts. Once on the ground, he was met by his instructor, Ben Hilton, and school director Matt Myatt, who handed Oliver his wings. He is now the youngest of three 16-year-olds who have all received their wings from Airborne Aviation Flying School this year. Apart from being his 16th birthday, Oliver also received his GCSE results from school and learned that he had passed all 11 of his subjects. The next step in his journey to gaining his National Private Pilot's Licence is a day trip to Le Touquet in France, which he will be flying to along with other members of the school. And there is a picture of him proudly holding his wings next to a little, I think it's a Cessna airplane, and obviously with his instructor and Matt as well. Well done, you.
The Tractor Club is celebrating its 50th anniversary. The Winchester Historic Tractor and Implement Club's annual ploughing competition is to be held this weekend. On Sunday, September the 15th, on the club's 50th anniversary, the event will be run at Grace's Farm in Martyrworthy. There are five classes for tractors and horticultural machinery. The competitors come from all walks of life, not necessarily from the agricultural world, especially now as the number of farm workers is gradually reducing. The Wessex Historic Tractor and Implement Club was set up 50 years ago by the then committee of the Hampshire County Ploughing Match. This committee consisted of a group of farmers, auctioneers and others with farming interests who wanted to preserve historic tractors. The club meets at the Swan Hotel, Arlesford, on the first Tuesday of each month from October to April. And those interested are welcome to turn up and join in. And for more information, contact the secretary on 01489 860 236. And this is accompanied by a photograph probably taken sometime in the 70s or 80s. And it's a member of the Wessex Historic Tractor and Implement Club in action doing some ploughing. And I remember these old tractors. And, of course, they don't have rollover bars or meet any of the current safety requirements of today. But they are fine old tractors.
And now a sports story from cricket. Organ is a big part of Hants' future. Felix Organ is hoping to captain Hampshire to many more trophies after leading the county to the second 11 championship title. The Academy graduates skippered Hampshire to a 143-run victory over Leicestershire in last week's SEC final at the Aegeus Bowl, thanks largely to an unbeaten 143 from Fletcher Middleton, son of Hampshire batting coach Tony, and 5-65 from Ryan Stevenson in the final innings. It's the county's first SEC title since 2001. Batting all-rounder Organ wants to lead Hampshire to more success. "I aspire to captain Hampshire," he said. "I know it's a long way away, though. It was a great experience to captain players older than myself, because trying to tell someone to do something when they have an extra 10 years in the game is not easy. It's also great to have the likes of Keith Barker to bounce ideas off, to help lead the younger guys. You learn from playing in the firsts and seeing the fields people set and their plans." They had a stunning season, unbeaten throughout the three-day championship. They only missed out on the T20 title by one run. Organ said, "We have a good young side, which is really tight-knit, but we also had a nice balance of some experience, which we all learnt from. There's a lot of depth to Hampshire at the moment. We also had a few 15-year-olds from the academy coming in and doing well. I felt all the academy players are really good. Hopefully they can all develop and move into the firsts at some point soon." Felix Organ has already made the jump into the first team this season and has made the opener's spot home, having bedded in with a century and a 77 in his three Specsavers County Championship appearances. He will continue to open with Ian Holland when Hampshire hosts Surrey for the next 4 days, but Riley Russell has played his last red ball match for the county and is now a T20 specialist. And there's a lovely picture of Felix Organ during his maiden first class 100, just stepping forward and striking the ball. Looks like that one's going for four.
Appeal launched to save Village Club. Excuse me. Members have voted to keep a village social club open, but still need to raise £2,000 to keep it afloat. Twyford Social Club members took the decision at an extraordinary general meeting on Saturday, August the 31st. As previously reported, the club was one of the two community facilities in the Winchester district, urging residents to use it or lose it, the other being the Waltham Chase post office. In a newsletter sent out by Twyford Parish Council, a spokesman for the club said, "In order to keep the club open, we need to raise £2,000 to keep the club solvent for the next 5 months. In that time, the committee, members and the village, our community, will work together to come up with initiatives to make the club more relevant to 2019 Twyford, whilst retaining its core value as a non-profit community club." The spokesman added, "The club is presently losing £400 a month, which is being funded by interest-free loans from our chairman, Robin. A sum of £2,000 will cover this deficit for 5 months, during which time the club will be working harder than ever to address current issues and deficiencies and generate more revenue by creating an environment and offering with global appeal." As previously reported, the social club in Queen Street is now closed on a Sunday and Monday to see if staff wages will be reduced to an affordable level. Meanwhile, staff at the post office are asking for 150 people to use the shop daily and spend around £5 each, and say that this will be enough revenue to keep the store open. A spokesperson from Waltham Chase Post Office said, "Back in 2011, we took over the village shop and post office, and we've invested a lot of time, effort and money to keep it going. We have worked extremely hard to make a success for our little village store. We have been lucky enough to live amongst you, make new friends, and we are very grateful for your loyalty and continued support. Like all businesses, we survive on your custom, and to secure our future in the village, we need to increase our turnover. If only 150 customers, we serve approximately 175 to 200 daily, could spend just £5 each day, this would do it." And there is a picture of Twyford Social Club on Queen Street to accompany that article.
The Hospital Trust wants to test their surgery plans. A shake-up of surgery services provided at Winchester Hospital could be tested before the public finishes having their say, and it is claimed morale amongst hospital staff has been plummeting in recent months. The proposed transformation of orthopaedics, tabled by Hampshire Hospitals Foundation Trust, which manages Royal Hampshire County Hospital, would see inpatient trauma operations no longer take place in Winchester. As previously reported, hospital bosses denied the move would happen without a consultation. However, they are keen to test the plans before a public engagement process reaches its conclusion. Trust chiefs now say a meeting of Hampshire County Council's Health and Adult Social Care Select Committee on Monday, which is September the 16th, will inform the schedule for any change of service. A timeline within a committee report lists a formal consultation running from November to early February. However, it later adds that the Trust may want to be testing some of these ideas early in order to provide better care this winter. Members of the Select Committee will be asked if they would be supportive of this approach. Officials at the Royal College of Nursing said they understood a consultation of staff had been put on hold for the time being while the Trust complete more work on it. Julie Maskery, who's the Chief Operating Officer of HHFT, said there are a number of reasons why they are planning the changes. "We have held numerous discussions with our key partners and within the Trust to develop a broad overview of what the clinical changes could look like, as well as the implications of these changes," said Ms. Maskery. "We have actively encouraged our staff and partners to share their ideas and concerns. This engagement will continue over the coming months and will be extended to include a wider range of stakeholders, patients, carers, and the public to help us shape the service. The timeline for any change to the service will be influenced by the essential and valued views of HASC members at their meeting on September the 16th. The Trust says it is hoping to create a Centre of Excellence for elective care at Winchester Hospital, with as many joint surgery procedures as possible taking place at the facility. It is believed the change would see many residents having to travel to Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital should they require emergency surgery on broken bones. The report says the next 2 months are critical in terms of developing our understanding of the impact of proposed changes, engaging with patients and stakeholders, and developing proposals. HHFT plans to bring a more detailed operational plan to the committee in November. A letter sent to the Chronicle, professing to be from a former nurse at RHCH, said the planned removal of the trauma service had led to morale levels plummeting and resignations. Meanwhile, staff at Winchester Hospital reportedly showed, quote, signs of unsettlement, quote, to the changes to where surgeries are carried out as early as July, according to a meeting of senior hospital officials. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, which is part of the proposed reconfiguration.
New owners plan extensive refurb. The new owners of an East Stratton pub have unveiled ambitious plans to refurbish and reopen it. Having been sold earlier this year by Lord Northbrook, the Northbrook Arms has a struggling trading history, having been closed for 6 months prior to the sale, a trend seen with many public houses within the Hampshire area. Now, new owners Kate and Adam Shanley have submitted redevelopment plans in a bid to revive the 19th century pub and breathe life back into it. The plans include a complete refit of the public house, modernisation of the letting rooms and accommodation, as well as a new spa facility servicing guests staying in the accommodation and the local community. Kate said, "It's clear that the pub and many like it have struggled to stay open through traditional trading to a narrow catchment area. We believe the success of the pub lies in increasing the commercial offering the site has to offer. An independent pub, supported by self-catering accommodation and spa facilities, not only better serves the area, but stands a much better chance of being viable, sustainable and robust through trading peaks and troughs." With the exception of three building extensions, all of the plans will be housed within the original buildings on site. The family have a history of successfully renovating and running self-catering accommodation. Experience, they believe, is the key to making the remote public house viable and sustainable moving forward. Kate added, "We're aware of the responsibility on us and welcome the challenge. There's no doubt we're not taking the easy route, but it's important to get the business offering right whilst maintaining the heritage and natural beauty the site has to offer. We've had a fantastic warm response from the local community so far, which we're incredibly grateful for." Kate and Adam will be the first couple to both own as well as run the pub in the location's history, with the Northbrook Arms having previously been occupied by a series of licensees. Lord Northbrook said, "Having been part of the family estate for generations, it was important that we found someone not only with the ambition and vision to make the pub work, but that wanted to do it in a way that complements the village. We're pleased to see this is happening."
Runners on Anglo-German run hand over cheque. Runners who pounded their way across Northern Europe to Winchester's twin town of Giessen have handed over a cheque to charity. Most of the Giessen Relay Run team gathered at the end of Winchester Park Run on Saturday to present a cheque for £4,072 to Sabrina Marsden, a fundraiser for the Winchester Hospice Appeal. The team ran 540 miles carrying a baton to the western German town, and they set off on Friday, August the 23rd, and reached their destination 7 days later. Organiser of the event, Adrian Horton, said, "It was quite an emotional experience and we were truly humbled by the fantastic reception we were given by the Giessen runners. Their route took in the South Downs Way, then along the coast to Dover for the ferry to Calais, through France, Belgium and the Netherlands and Germany. They ran on a mixture of roads, cycleways, canal towpaths and forest trails. The youngest two runners were just 11 years old and the oldest two were 67. And there's a lovely picture of all the runners holding up a check and holding up their T-shirts that they were all wearing. They weren't holding up their own T-shirts. This was a separate T-shirt, I might explain. And they were handing over the check at North Wars Recreation Ground.
The Meon Valley MP receives a knighthood in May's list. The Meon Valley MP has received a knighthood. George Hollingbury, the former Trade Minister who served as Theresa May's Parliamentary Private Secretary in both Downing Street and the Home Office, was recognised in the ex-Prime Minister's resignation honours list. The Tory, who lives in Alresford, was one of three MPs to receive a knighthood. Mr. Hollingbury said, "I am deeply honoured and humbled to be accorded this honour by Her Majesty. I suspect many people who would receive such awards believe they have just been doing their job, and I feel precisely that today. It is honour enough to be elected by my constituents in the Meon Valley and play my part in public life." He added, "I feel enormously lucky to have had that opportunity, and I thank my colleagues both in the constituency and in Westminster for all the help they have given me over the years." But not everyone was happy to hear the news, including the Liberal Democrat parliamentary candidate, Lewis North. Mr. North, who grew up in Cheriton, stood in the Upper Meon Valley by-election last September, slashing the Tory majority from 882 down to just 124. And he said, "As his constituent, I find it utterly insulting that he's being rewarded for an act which is so clearly against our national interest." Or was it all his efforts in securing a trade deal with the Faroe Islands that got him the knighthood?
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. And thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, it's thanks to our readers, Norma York.
Goodbye.
Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.